Everybody, and welcome to a long-awaited episode of What's in the Box, where we talk about what we're playing in Cube and what you should try out in yours. I'm back, and I'm Quad Nines, or Drew, here with my other host, Zakil.
What's going on, everyone? Long time. This has been, I think, a year now.
Close.
Yeah. About a year, yeah. It's been a while. Both of us have had stuff going on, but we are back here. It's going to be our catch-up episode and a quick review of Dominaria. I want to thank everyone out there for, you know, all the support on Twitter and all of that stuff. The community has always been awesome and very supportive of our cast. And more than anything, I'm just happy to be back talking cards.
Yeah, you've had some pretty interesting the last month or so as far as cards. You want to kind of go over the changes in your collection since last we talked?
Yeah, so I made the jump. So some people, I don't know if everyone knows, but I do run an actual powered cube to some extent. It's not finished yet. But I really, really, really wanted to kind of move into black borders, only because part of it for the collection reason, and the other part of just being like a really cool factor and kind of really grinding my collection down. And I traded an unlimited Lotus, an unlimited Ruby, an unlimited Ancestral, and some other change into a beta Black Lotus. So with the help of Jeremy on Twitter, Missouri MTG, we lived the dream.
Yeah, it looked pretty good too. I saw like it didn't look like beat. It looked like a nice cube Lotus, you know?
Yeah, there is a little bit of inking on it, I think, but other than that, I'm not looking for grading or anything like that. It's purely for my own collection and cube play, so I am excited. But big shouts out to Jeremy, big shouts out to Grey Ogre Games. You know, we were able to basically do a deal. When you start to do stuff at that level, it kind of just turns into like churning inventory. You don't want to keep those big high end cards, and you're able to turn those into a bunch of other easily sellable cards, it's just much better for everyone. So yeah, I didn't think I was gonna, you know, I didn't think that was ever gonna happen. And GP Seattle comes, and I live in Seattle, and you know, Jeremy's in town, so we meet up, and I'm like, hey, you know, what's the chances that I'm able to do this deal? And I walked around the showroom, and ironically enough, the booth that had the best deal was also someone that he was pretty familiar with. So we really just strapped down and kept going. But I don't know. It's awesome. There's a vlog coming soon, actually. I'm halfway done with it. It'll show the kind of detail in the process. I don't know if I'm going to do a bend test on this one.
Yeah, let's not do that. Let's not do that.
But So vlog coming soon. Stay tuned. My YouTube channel got changed just to Zakil Gordon from Merfolk NPG. I'm going to be making some Magic content, but kind of branching off. But anyway, you know, apart from that, what's been going on with you? I know you've been, you know, busy as well the last couple months.
Let me see. Since last we casted, I've moved about an hour and a half away. Got a different job, and I have been to a few GPs, so got to do a little cubing since then. Sold off some of the expensive chaff of my cube, like Moat and Berserk, which are very awesome cards, and they look cool, but they don't get played. And I turned it into a little bill money and some other foley goodness.
I think, to be fair, I think Moat is also kind of like the biggest miser card in all of Magic.
I know, like, if I'm going to have a card that nobody really wants to play, I'd rather have Tabernacle, but I waited too long on that one, so. Yeah. Wish I had have had one before they quadrupled in price or whatever, but I did upgrade a couple cards. I traded in my old, or I sold my pack full Thalia, the original one, mm-hmm. and got the W MCQ promo, which looks really good. Like it. Other than that, I've been updating it some. I don't have all the cards from the last four or five sets that I want, but it's pretty close. My cube, for those that don't know, it is quote powered. Although I'm a kind of pauper, so it's collector's edition. So they are black border. And actually, most of them are rounded. Still good, though. Oh, it looks pretty good. It's and I don't. like just completely have my stomach in knots if there's somebody I don't just really, really know drafting my cube, you know, like people at the shop, you know, if they're with somebody I know, that's fine. Instead of like wanting to take a blood sample and contract for their firstborn if they run off with, you know, some cards. So it's not as much stress that way. Also, and I don't have to file for divorce for, you know, having it all black border powered out right now, but it's pretty nice. My dual lands are still white border, but that's okay. I use the old adage of they're easier to search up when you're fetching.
Yeah,
that's what people say when they don't have black border duels.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, ironically enough, CE Power has actually done really well in the past year. They're not as cheap as they used to be. You used to be able to get them, nothing. And now they are, you know, with old school and all that stuff, you know, proxy vintage and all that, they are becoming a pretty penny.
I think I didn't get Time Twister because, you know, why would you? but I got the 8 pieces. I got some from TSG when he was selling some of his cube stuff off. I got a ruby, I think, from Chris Van Meter. The TSG stuff was like rounded by somebody that knew what they're doing because they look really good. But anyway, long story short, I bought the Lotus at GP Louisville last January, I guess it was. And counting that, I think I had like 850 in all 8 cards. Or maybe 900. It's 900. Because I got a sapphire off of eBay for cheap, and like about $100 a card for the other ones, a little less, and then the Lotus was around $3 or something like that. So it probably was like $9 or $9.50, but still, like, the Lotus is more than that now. So
it's kind of surprising. Absolutely.
Show if you pick up cards that aren't going to be reprinted, they eventually kind of have to go up.
Yeah. Well, and that's something I wanted to make a quick little talk about. I do know this is a cube podcast, but you know, one of the, you know, as cube owners, it's very important to be able to manage your collection and kind of just find easier ways to purchase things. And I do think paying somewhat attention to MTG finance and the values behind cards are really important. And I have all kinds of cards that I never would have thought I would have had just from establishing those connections with people and doing buy lists and stuff of extra stuff I don't have. Right now, I unfortunately don't play anything other than Cube. I have an EDH deck, but I'm not playing Modern. I have half of a Legacy deck built. But just really starting to churn that and grind down into my Cube. And, you know, for the most part, my collection is really, literally yielded dividends. With that said, Gaia's Cradle is like $500 now. They're I don't know. Magic is getting... I never thought that Magic was going to get this expensive, but I was very wrong. So I don't envy anyone who's starting their cube nowadays if you want to really go all the way with paper.
Yeah, like, you really have to just get the... maybe not the most efficient card. Like, might get something that's been printed in the last year or two. You know, it's close, but it's not the same. Yeah, it's... Like I said, I don't know what I'd do if I had to start over on that. Probably wouldn't do it. But.
Yeah, no, I definitely not. And, you know, one thing I will say is that there is some aspect to the journey. Like, I've enjoyed... I still don't have a fully finished cube. And the reality is I probably never will. But I've really enjoyed the journey of grinding and buying and trading and selling. And, literally turning... you know, 5-cent cards into $1 cards into $5 cards into all the way up to now... you know, actually having a Beta Lotus. I never thought that was going to happen. But that journey is just a really, really fun experience. I've met all kinds of wonderful people along the way. So if anyone out there, you know, don't be discouraged by the overall cost, because it certainly will cost you a lot of money. But I'm like, I think the journey and really, you know, just having fun and playing with other players and enjoying the format for what it is, should be the first priority and kind of first thing, as opposed to cost. My first build of my cube was completely proxy, so.
Yeah, and, you know, like, say you just draft, like, the whatever the most recent set is, you know, just set aside maybe one pick a draft for, hey, this card might go good in my cube.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's like rare drafting, only you're really going to get some more use out of it, so. Mm-hmm. You can do stuff like that. also there's a lot of cube cards that don't see play in any other format, really, like not even EDH. So a lot of times you can trade a random card or two for like tons of card out of somebody's binders that they just don't need or want. So it's there's ways to get it done. So
yeah, absolutely.
Definitely don't be discouraged.
Yeah, absolutely not. And the last quick thing I'll add is, especially with Standard, I know a lot of new players obviously are going to be really interested in Standard, and you start to see the cycle once you're around playing Magic for a couple of years. The most expensive cards that are in Standard are always going to be, you know, $40-$50, and if you're lucky enough to pull that, you know, pull one of those, and you're not necessarily interested in playing Standard, you can really turn that into a lot of other stuff. Like the majority, I think the bulk part of a cube is probably not even that expensive. Like, you know, your Eternal Witnesses and Brainstorms and, you know, or, you know, Counterspell, simple stuff like that, maybe 50 cents, $1, $2 kind of stuff. Whereas, you know, you can turn the one Chase Mythic of the set into 30, you know, really good cube cards, which are going to, it's going to knock out a large portion of what you need on your list. But, anyway, we'll, you know, just we'll move on from there. But
well, just remember, I don't know if you remember, I did that, it was a cube giveaway when I hit like 500 subs on YouTube. Been like, what, 2 or 3 years or something like that. But it was like 185 cards. So it was enough for 4 people to draft, like just to start off. Mm-hmm. And I just happened to, it's still on my cube tutor. I just realized that. So I clicked the price function on it. And, you know, for the cheap versions of whatever they are, it's like not even $200. It's like $190 TCG. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it would be a fairly playable cube. And this is cards, all these cards are, the newest ones are, gosh, I don't even know, maybe Theros. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, they're all, you know, they're all pretty cheap. So you can definitely start a cube on not much and get there. So, speaking of getting cards, anything you're looking to add, or are you just looking at Dominaria stuff, or what?
Jeez, pardon me. So Dominaria, there's a lot of really exciting stuff coming in Dominaria. There's one thing I do want to talk about quickly first. The Cube community has kind of put out a, not necessarily like a help, or a plea for help, but just to kind of really create, you know, find a platform to foster discussion. Right now, the Cube community, I think, is pretty fragmented in a couple different platforms like Reddit or MTG Salvation or Twitter. And I think there are a lot of really good resources out there for people who you may not necessarily even be aware of. Obviously, you know, the two people that come to mind off the top of my head, you know, friends of the show, they've both been on. Usman Jamil, who's also the co-host of the Third Power podcast and a writer for Gathering Magic, and White Wolf 123 on MTG Salvation, both put out great Dominaria articles and, you know, obviously create their own content and do their own set reviews. So I just wanted to put that out there before we get into the spoiler, because, you know, in all honesty, I've read both of those before I even, you know, I'm not able to, unfortunately, be in the day-to-day Magic scene anymore, but those two people put, you know, amazing effort out there. And if you're really interested in learning anything about Cube, I highly recommend looking at those two people, you know, among others as well, but the two that just come to mind.
Yeah, and Alexi, I wouldn't, like, I would kind of call it like a rally that's happened the last little bit. Like, they're just kind of get all the Cube people together, you know, and maybe put out more content or help with some content. And it's, hopefully it works out, because for a couple years there, Cube, I won't say got more popular, but like it was out there a little bit more. So I'm hoping that turns around and happens again, because it's, I enjoy talking about Cube. So.
No, absolutely. And, you know, as much as we may bicker between powered or unpowered, or, you know, proxy versus unproxy, or I want an uncube or whatever it is, the reality is that we're all still playing the same format, and I still love and you know, enjoy hearing discussion about it. And that's from all the other podcasts out there, all the other content creators, all the other writers. I would really say to support those people, because there's great resources out there. Like, I was really introduced to the format by Matt Cranstuber and Jack Grannon on Joy of Cubing. Like, that was my favorite overall podcast, like actual podcast out of anything that I listened to. The production quality was amazing and the information was great. So you know, just really kind of double down, and you know, the people you may have listened to, or you know, the couple of resources out there, I would just, you know, maybe give them an ear.
Yeah, and I'm hoping, I know Milo's come back to, Milo the Great One's come back to YouTube after about probably a year and a half off, and he's made some draft content, but cube content as well.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, so hopefully everybody will get cranked back up and kind of come together a little bit more. I'm still hoping to get that one really big cube get together so we can all draft it, a GP or, you know, GP adjacent, maybe not actually on the floor, but, you know, which I have done before. We have done cube drafts at a GP, so.
Yeah, no, I'm down. I'm flying out. If we get the next one, I'll probably come this year, next year. Hopefully, if it happens this year, I'm 100% down to come by. So, anyway, I skipped over your question a minute ago. Are there any cards, you know, with regards to Dominaria, like there are, you know, are amazing cards coming out there, and we have I have a couple small lists here we can talk about. But outside of that, just out of curiosity, is there anything in your cube that you're looking for, or anything that you've, you know, kind of been escaping you?
It's kind of like a moat-esque card. The only card I ever really wanted to try in the cube that I never picked up was Workshop, because, well, it's ridiculously expensive, and I don't know, it's very niche. Like, granted, I love my artifact decks, so, yeah, it seems like the card for me, but, I really can't. I'm trying to think of, there's a lot of cards out of the new set that I want, and I've added quite a few from Rivals, but I can't think of something that I just really have to try out. You know, it's not Dominaria. Most everything that I at least wanted to try, I've picked up here or there. But I'm sure there's something I haven't looked at that I'll see in somebody's cube pretty soon.
Well, all right. Well, let's move into Dominaria here. So I guess to start this off, we have a couple of new card types. Like the set is actually pretty exciting just in terms of the design space they explore. Do you want to start this one off?
Well, one of the newest things, there's this card category called Historic, which makes up artifacts, legendaries, which, by the way, now all Planeswalkers are errated to be legendary, and Sagas, which are a new card type. But yeah, Historic is the theme, and like I said, a lot of the set makes up that theme. But a lot of previous cards, like artifacts, every artifact will trigger this. But anyway, the new kind of the new toys, I think, are Sagas that have come out of Dominaria, and it's an enchantment that comes down, and when it enters battlefield, it does what they call Chapter 1. And then after your draw step, it'll hit Chapter 2. And sometimes 1 and 2 are the same thing. Sometimes they're not. And then after your next draw step, or if you can get another counter on it, proliferates a thing. But after the third chapter, it does something on the third chapter, and then it goes, you sacrifice it. So I've got to play with some of these, like in sealed deck and stuff like that. And I'm pretty excited to try some out for cube. Have you looked into any of these?
Yeah, there's a couple, you know, I always want to take one card of some new design space and just put it in the cube, even if it may be a little less optimal than, you know, what you're kind of supposed to do. But History of Benalia, is that correct?
Benalia.
Three mana, white enchantment. The first two chapters, you create a 2/2 white knight token creature with vigilance, and then the third, knights you control get 2/1 until end of turn. So just a pretty nice, and the art is amazing.
Yeah, it's no Bradley. It's like stained glass. It looks amazing. That's the other thing. The setup of the cards are vertical. Like the left side is the text and the right side is the art. And it's just, it looks really neat. Like I when I first saw it, I was like, I don't know about that. But I saw one in person, I was like, yeah, this is pretty good. So, like you're talking about History, but I love the art on that one. My other favorite is Phyrexian Scriptures.
Oh yeah.
Which just, I don't know, it looks pretty good. It's 4 mana And I think the first one is put a +1/+1 counter on a creature and you make that creature an artifact. The second one is destroy all non-artifact creatures. So you know if that creature's still alive, it will stay alive, at least through the wrath. And then the third one's really weird. Some of these chapters don't make sense. But the third one is exile all cards from all opponents' graveyards, which I guess that means like they can't get their stuff back, which, okay, sure. But, yeah, there's a couple of them that are really neat. Those two are two of the ones I'm wanting to try out. There's a few more. Let me see. I guess there was, what was the other? Yeah, there's a new card type called Legendary Sorcery. Have you looked at those, anything?
Yeah, that, so, as with everyone, I'm sure, when I first read this, I was like, what? You can only have one sorcery on the stack? how do we respond with the sorcery with another sort? Just as a funny thing when I read, I was like, this makes no sense. But the reality is I'm just an idiot. I haven't, which one are you mostly interested in, actually?
Oh, the Time Walk, of course.
Oh, yeah, pardon me.
Although I did, okay, the Time Walk one is Karn's Temporal Sundering. It's 6 mana, 4 blue-blue, and you take an extra turn, and you bounce a permanent. It can be your permanent, it can be their permanent, whatever. But you have to have the Legendary Sorceries, the drawback is you have to control a Legendary Creature or a Planeswalker. Like, the Sagas don't do anything. Artifacts don't do anything. It has to be a Legendary Creature or a Planeswalker to even cast it. So I had some of these at the pre-release and on Sealed on Magic Online. And another one that's really good is the red Jaya's Immolating Inferno or something like that. It's a big fireball, basically. And it's really powerful, but it's just quite awkward when you draw it and you don't have a legendary in play. You're like, well, this is a blank. So, I don't know. I'm hoping... I might give a couple of them a try. Hopefully they work out. But that is... I'm a little bit more excited about the Sagas.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, I also want to jump to Artifact. Well, I guess, how do you want to do? We want to do good old Wooburg, or how do you want to go?
We can start with Artifacts. That's fine. Okay. Seems good.
So, with Artifacts, probably one of the most hyped cards in a long time, Mox Amber. It's an actual Mox, 0 mana, legendary artifact. Mm. Add 1 mana of any color among legendary creatures or planeswalkers you control. I don't know if this scales into the cube environment very well, if at all. go ahead. Yeah.
Best I can tell is it's going to be kind of like the only modern deck I've seen wanting to run it. If you're playing a white weenie deck, it might work, just because there's a couple legendary one drops in white and a couple more two drops in white, and it just, you know, if that's what you're going to have to do, it makes that deck better, and that's about the only real strong thing I've seen so far.
Mm-hmm. Isamaru and Tethalia kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen somebody in Modern go Isamaru, play a Amber, tap it for mana, play a second Amber, sack the first, or bend the first one, tap it, play Thalia. Exactly. They had 4 power in play, and their opponent's first turn was essentially blanked. So yeah. It was pretty impressive, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't know how often anything like that's going to come up, but it's kind of cool.
The second artifact, or at least a mythic artifact in this set, is Weatherlight. I don't know if this is quite going to make it either, but a return of vehicles. Weatherlight is the... I think you're probably more familiar with the lore than I am. I don't want to misspeak.
It's basically the magical flying ship that the back in the Gerard Jorah original storyline with Urza and everything. It's basically what they flew around on. It could go, pretty sure it could go between planes and stuff as well. But yeah, it's like this huge, awesome skyship basically. The stats on it are cool. It's just the effect's a little weird. And I don't know how it's going to translate into cubes so much.
Absolutely. So 4 mana, 4/5 flyer, crew 3. When it deals combat damage to a player, look at the top 5 cards of your library, and you may reveal a historic card from among them and put it in your hand. That word, yeah, like, I think, messes, unfortunately, kicks it out of contention.
Yeah, I think there's actually a sorcery that does that ability. It's called Board the Weatherlight. And I was reading Usman's article earlier, and he was talking about how, you know, there's cards like this that are better than this that don't see play. Like for a normal cube deck, something like Lead the Stampede is about as good as it gets because, you know, you're going to have a lot of creatures, and that card sees no cube play. So, and this effect, while, yes, you could build around it, have a bunch of artifacts, a couple of planeswalkers, whatever, still the top five is just, you know, you're going to brick on it more often than you want. That's still a 4-5 flyer for four that dodges sorcery speed removal. It's okay. It's just, I'm not just chomping at the bit to try it out. I definitely, considering the lore and everything behind the Weatherlight, I wish it had been better. Now, there's another colorless card, but it's not actually an artifact. Did you want to talk about that one now? Or?
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. This one, yeah, go for it.
So, you know, I'm thinking, you know, if I made a 7-mana Planeswalker that was just really busted, and, you know, it's, especially if we can get it out on turn 3 in Modern, you know, with Tron, what would I do to it? Oh, I know. I'd make it 4-mana and make it not quite as good, but it's 4-mana. So, Karn, Scion of Urza. Everybody I've talked to is really impressed with it. Like, it's 4-mana, 5 loyalty. It comes down, and it has a plus, which is basically replaces itself. You plus 1, you reveal the top 2 cards of your library. An opponent chooses one of them. You put that card in your hand, and you exile the other one with a silver counter on it. What's a silver counter? I don't know, but it's just they made it up for this. Minus 1 is put a card you own with a silver counter on it from exile into your hand. So you can basically play it, plus it, get the worst of 2 cards. And the next turn, if you minus it, you get the other card. Or you can just keep plussing it, whatever. And the kicker is, every time you plus, your opponent gets the choice. But whenever you minus, like say if you have 3 cards in exile with the silver counters, you still get to pick one. Like, it's not like random or they pick. Like, you just get the best one. Also, when coming down at 5 loyalty, his minus 2, he doesn't really have an ultimate, but his minus 2 is create a 0/0 colorless construct artifact creature token with this creature gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control. So it's always going to be at least a 1/1 because it counts itself. But an artifact deck, it could be really big, and they're almost like pack rats. The more you make, the bigger they get.
Absolutely.
It's kind of weird because it can go in different decks, I think, and depending on the situation of the game, it can do completely different things. It can be card advantage, it can be defense, you can go back and forth. I'm really looking forward to getting this thing down in a kind of a one of my cube decks.
Yeah, this card seems absurd. this is just hoping a slam dunk include, I think.
Mm-hmm. I'm also hoping it's not too good in standard because it's like $40 right now, or $45, and I'm not, and I want to buy the full, so I'm hoping it just goes down just a little bit. But yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. Card looks really good.
No, this card is awesome, and you know it's really funny. So, if you were to choose, this is an interesting one actually. If you were to choose 2 colorless planeswalkers, and you can only choose 2, which ones would you have?
I mean, I haven't tried this one yet, but I'm still pretty sure it's 7-mana Karn and Ugin.
Okay. And go ahead, pardon me.
I'm a big fan of Karn, but Ugin, like, I first picked Ugin with a lot of good cards in the pack before. Same with Karn, but Ugin's super strong, and I might be persuaded to pick this Karn over the original Karn, but I don't know.
Yeah, I was gonna, just off of gut feeling now, I would probably play this and Ugin just because they kind of don't compete for the same slot, where I think Karn kind of competes obviously with the same slot as Ugin. But just being 4-mana can be a little bit more applicable to other decks rather than giant, you know, heavy, big-hitting planeswalkers. But, you know, you don't need to choose 2. I was just curious. You know, you can run all 3.
Let me see.
Also, quick note to Gilded Lotus getting reprinted. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, I'm going to pretty much pick up every foil Gilded Lotus I can find. because I imagine there'll be a bunch of them in everybody. You know, everybody wants them, but I always like that card. That card's always good.
Well, let's jump to Wooburg, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And I'll let you go, actually. You can go for it.
Well, it's kind of exciting. That's kind of a sad day when Baneslayer Angel just is legit not good enough. I mean, you might still play it, of course, because, you know, it's not like you have to cut a card for the exact same type of card. But Lyra Dawnbringer is a house. Like, it's the same stats, 5 mana, 3 and 2 white, for a 5/5. It's got flying, first strike, and lifelink, just like Baneslayer. But instead of having the really rarely relevant
obscure
rider pro demons and dragons, which it's come up before, it has, but it just not very often, this one pumps all your angels and gives them lifelink. So that Resto Angel you blinked in the turn before is now a 4/5 with lifelink. Gisella, any, I don't know, changeling, your Mutavault's bashing in there for 3 lifelink, you know, cool. But yeah, the card and the art's sick. It's, I think, Chris Ryan, but yeah, it looks really good, and I want to try it out. And the new legendary frames, have you seen any of them in person?
I haven't seen them in person. I can imagine they're pretty cool, though.
Yeah, you know, generally Magic players don't like change and freak out when they try and change the card, but I've yet to hear anyone say, oh, I don't like the frame, because the frame looks amazing, especially in full. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that the trade-off for me here is, like you said, how often does the Pro of Demons... Like, it certainly does come up. Like, when I think of, you know, like a Thundermaw or a Storm Breath... Well, I guess Storm Breath doesn't make sense, but...
Storm Breath, they just kind of pass each other in the night. Like, they're not even... They can't ever fight, so... But yeah, I know what you mean.
Maybe some giant... Probably not Grizzlebrand, but some giant, big, idiot demon. But, I think you hit the nail on the head, right? Giving Angels 1/1 and lifelink, and especially just having any Changelings or Mutavault effects is... this card's pretty nuts, man. I don't know. I'm actually really excited. I haven't been excited for, you know, kind of a vanilla creature in a long time, but this guy, girl, I guess, is pretty nuts.
And you know, like I said, like, you don't have to cut Baneslayer. Play them together. Now Baneslayer's a 6/6. And it's got...
Yeah, it's true.
It doesn't get double lifelink because it's not Armadillo Cloak, but, you know, it's still good. So, I don't know, it's definitely one I'm going to slam in there. I don't know. I think there's one card that everybody's a little bit more excited for. This is the Splashy Mythic, but there's an uncommon that's going around that's kind of got everybody's attention. You know which one I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Good old Dauntless Bodyguard. 1 mana, 2/1. So right off the bat, we got a Savannah Lions.
Yeah. As you Vanguard choose. Get wrecked.
Yeah. Human Knight, which is human, that those are both relevant creature types.
Mm-hmm.
As Dauntless Bodyguard enters the battlefield, choose another creature you control, and then you may sacrifice Dauntless Bodyguard. The chosen creature gains indestructible until end of turn. And, like, first of all, having a 1 mana 2/1 is still always great. You're going to play all of them all the time. But having a 1 mana 2/1 that has upside later in the game is is like just unparalleled, right? This card is an auto include in, I think, almost every cube.
Yeah, if you play 2 power 1 drops in white, there's really no reason not to play this one. This one's better than the majority of them. Like,
yeah,
I just like.
I will say, Soldier of the Pantheon is also great, but once again, you're probably gonna like the threshold is probably like maybe 3, 4, 5, 6. I don't know how many you need.
Yeah,
probably 4. And yeah, I mean, this card is awesome. Lee Vanguard is pretty bad.
it's seen better days.
But yeah, no, I'm excited, man. These cards are sick. Was there anything else in white here? There's a couple, you know, we get our big angels and birds and all that, but I haven't seen too much else.
Well, I just want to talk about, there's a Danitha Capuchin, I always butcher that last name, Paragon is what it says, but it's one of Gerard's descendants, supposedly. But it's a 3 mana 2/2, which, you know, sounds bad, but it's got first strike, vigilance, and lifelink. And if that's not enough, it makes aura and equipment cost 1 less to cast. And, I mean, what's a white weenie deck without some equipment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, even, I don't know, there's a few good enchantments that still see cube play. You know, making those cheaper, not too bad. That's definitely something if you're trying to beef up your, you know, your Stoneforge package, this card just kind of helps all those things. And then, like, it's got three keyword abilities, and putting equipment on that seems to make it better.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like you said, I think it's really interesting because you can have different identities with white. Mm-hmm. I've seen people do, you know, the human soldier package where, you put in a bunch of, like, those, you can even, you know, like, field marshal effects or something like that. You can make it a little bit more top-end angel-heavy. And then I guess this card for me would fall in that mid-range of, you know, we have these cards that combo with other cards. Obviously, Stoneforge is going to be in every cube, and you don't really need to make it better, but the supporting cast around that card with something like this is great, and it doesn't need to necessarily be, you know, Batter Skull, but even just the one-off equipment that you're playing in your cube is great. And, you know, worst comes to worst, you just can equip Skull Clamp for free and draw a bunch of cards.
Yeah, although this thing wouldn't
all cast. Oh no.
Well, yeah, but oops. I mean, it's cheaper to cast, and you know, once this thing gets hooked up with equipment, it's going to be hard to kill because it's got first strikes. I mean, provided it pumps its power, you know. I can't imagine this thing, like most good creatures, with a Jitte on them. Or, I don't know, any of the swords, and this thing just goes to town. So, and it's got vigilance, so it stays back on defense. I don't know. Like I said, I'm far from a creature combat person, but this one, just one I might not mind seeing on my side of the battlefield.
Oh, absolutely. Let's move into blue here. There's one card I'm pretty excited for that isn't necessarily like a big haymaker, and that is Blink of an Eye. It's a 2-mana instant that's with a kicker that's also 1 in a blue. And it says, return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. If this spell was kicked, draw a card. So Into the Royal.
Yes, I hear like Into the Royal. Here's another one.
Yeah, and we have Into the Royal, we now have this card, and we have Cyclonic Rift. If you're playing any of those effects, this is another one, and this card is great.
Yeah, really weird art, though. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah, it is.
But, yeah, I played this. I mean, I played Into the Royal a ton, but this card's, you know, it gets there. If you have to play it for two, fine. You know, maybe you're bouncing when they're putting an aura on something, getting value that way. Sometimes you bounce your own stuff in response to a removal spell and kick it, draw a card on top. So, you know, sometimes it's kind of a counter spell if you can get rid of their target. And sometimes it just, you know, end of turn, bounce the creature they paid a billion for, draw a card, and set them back a ton. It's a pretty good card. It's, if you're, like you said, if you're running that type of effect, might as well just add this one in.
Yeah, and, well, you know, once again, being return target non-land permanent as opposed to an unsummon effect or something, it's just something to think about. And it's common, I believe, right? Or is this uncommon?
It is common. Yep. Yeah, it's hard to tell because for some reason they made the common symbol white instead of black like it's always been, and the silver for uncommon is surprisingly similar. I've got to where I don't even look at the set symbol. I just look down the collector number for the U or the C, because that's the only real way I can tell.
Yeah.
Now, there is an uncommon that's pretty interesting, and it should be right up your alley.
Oh, yes, it is true. The Merfolk Trickster?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, Merfolk Trickster, 2 blue mana for a 2/2 with flash. When Merfolk Trickster enters the battlefield, tap target creature an opponent controls. It loses all abilities until end of turn. So, just a bananas combat creature that makes everything difficult. It obviously this fits into the constructed side perfectly, but even just being, I mean, it's going to basically snap off any creature that it's supposed to block.
Mm-hmm.
And this is great. We've seen, what was that card? There was like that one card, I think from Commander, it was like a 4/1 cat, illusionary cat. When you dealt damage to it, you drew that number of cards it took or something like that. I don't know.
I remember that. Illusionary Ambusher, I believe it is.
There you go, yeah. Like, all we've had a couple different variants on this kind of strategy with combat creatures, but this one being able to essentially kill the creature and live for the next turn is great.
Yeah, I mean, I have been, you know, bored and attacking with my 1/2. My Deathrite Shaman didn't have anything to eat, so I'm like, oh, fine, I'm going to get in there, send a message. Well, the message is you're going to get ambushed and they're going to eat your Deathrite Shaman.
Yeah.
So, there's that. There's a couple other cool cases, like it makes Tarmogoyf's O1s and just eats them. It like if you're attacking with lifelink, they can flash it in, and if they don't want to tap it down, just in general, if they want you to attack but then lose an ability, like it makes it lose first strike, lifelink, whatever. So there's definitely a lot of play in this card, and it's only 2 mana. Like
flying as well. I think flying is a big one.
Oh, it's flash. Oh, losing flying. I got you.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
I saw more than a couple of people ambushed, like 1/1 and kind of 2/1 flyers, and just like trade off, but felt good because you're getting rid of their flyer, you know. So yeah, and it, like I've always said, if worst case it's a bear, it's playable sometimes in kind of creature deck. But if it's a bear with upside that could lead to, like, a blowout or just a really big swing, like, sign me up.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, blue does have a couple of the, I think, a couple of the better sagas. I got to play with 2 of them during the pre-release. And the third one is not really good for Dominaria Limited. But the one I've seen a lot of people are trying to play is the Antiquities War, which is the one that's not really good for Dominaria Limited, but it's basically like a Tezzeret on an enchantment. It's 3 and a blue for a enchantment saga, and chapters 1 and 2 are the same. You look at the top 5 cards in your library, you may reveal an artifact from among them and put it into your hand, and you put the rest on the bottom in a random order. And then the third chapter is artifacts you control become artifact creatures with base power and toughness 5/5 until end of turn. So it's like the plus on Agent of Bolas and pretty much the ultimates on both Tetherets, both the old Tetherets, making 5/5s. So like, you know, I've got a bunch
of, you're a big fan of this card.
Yeah, I've got a lot of artifacts in my cube, and I like the blue black or Grixis artifact deck, and sometimes you just have artifacts lying around not doing anything. Well, now on the third turn, they can beat down for 5. And, you know, it does, if you've got, I'd say the number would be like 7 or 8 artifacts in your deck, this is going to hit a pretty fair number of the times you act, or, you know, the chapter goes off. Like, you may brick sometimes, but okay. But like I say, even if you have just 1 or 2 artifacts in play when it goes off, adding 10 power to the board, and you still have all your mana up. Like, once you play it the first turn, the second and third chapters, when they go off, it doesn't cost you anything. Like, you've got all your mana, you're ready to go, you get still got cards, and you probably drew a card, so it's pretty interesting how the game plays out.
Especially, you know, obviously being in blue, having your mana up and being able to, you know, get the additional upside the following 2 turns is really good. Now, this card is awesome. The artifact deck, you know, it's funny because the artifact deck has always really been there, but it's still, I wouldn't necessarily say it's tier 1. It's probably like tier 1.5 in terms of design. But I'm always looking forward to new cards making, you know, buffing that up and making that, you know, the best it can be. This card's awesome.
Yeah, it's always been more of a build around, like, you want to open up one of the top 2 or 3 cards and just basically snatch every artifact you see. And but it's also kind of open-ended, like, you never know when they'll print something, like, maybe this is the card that gets it over the hill. Like, they could print some random card that does nothing in standard, but in your cube it just makes the deck explode. So always on the lookout for those.
Funny enough, you mentioned Mishra's Workshop earlier. I was thinking about it yesterday. I think Mishra's Workshop is, like, the best pack 2 pick 1 in a lot of cubes, because it's, a lot of the times it's not very good, but when you have, like, the structure supported around it, that and Talarian Academy, it is infinitely better. And it's just interesting. Like, I was just thinking about that today. I don't know if there are too many good you know, cards in cube that are like that. That can be, I guess, a design flaw to some extent, where, you know, you want every card to be, you know, as best as possible. But supporting those niche strategies, I think, is pretty rewarding for those decks. Yeah. It kind of requires those cards.
Well, you know, it's up there. It's kind of like LAD, right? Or even something like Yogwheel, which I just think is a good card anyway. But, you know, by the end of the first pack, you can tell if, like, say, Storm's open and you've got some of the cards to go with it. Oh, I opened up a Lion's Eye Diamond. Well, let's go in there. You know, you don't want to first pack one, pick one of Lion's Eye Diamond because, you know, you might not see anything. It's just a really dead card. But, yeah, like you said, this might be a really good card to pick up in pack two or pack three.
So looking at blue, there's a couple. I guess we'll hold multicolor off for afterwards. One other thing I wanted to talk about, because we haven't talked about it in the past year, is they finally found the blue cantrip that works for them in standard, which is Opt. In terms of the overall, you know, power level of cube, I don't think this comes even close, unfortunately, but. You know, this with the last set and, you know, kind of being in standard, I think this will be around for a long time. And it's just interesting because we've had, I mean, how many times have they tried to remodel Ancestral Recall, right? It's been like five cards and four of them are broken in half.
Like, yep. I think Opt and Serum Visions are what you're left with in modern. And like, you know, they're nowhere close to Brainstorm, Ponder, or Preordain. Yeah. And, you know, Opt is okay. It's not, it's serviceable, you know, card draw and selection and all that. It's just, it's not as good as it can be. And, you know, it just doesn't go well in some decks, but it's fine. So I don't know. I like it better than Serum Visions in a lot of decks just because the instant speed part of it. But at the same time, sometimes you just want to churn through your deck and look at all the cards you can, and Opt doesn't really do that well.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I think we're going on to black here.
Man, black, if there's a color that got the hookup in this set, it is black. To me, yep. Like, there's like four or five cards I'm just dying to try out.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's. Which one are you most excited about?
Well, I'm excited about the saga, the Phyrexian Scriptures, but like I played with it a little bit. It'll be okay. But the card that's just crazy in any limited environment, just about, is going to be Josu Vest, Lich Knight. Have you read that card?
I'm reading it. Oh yes. This is the card that basically puts. What is it? 16 power? Well, it's a total of 20 power on board?
With menace. It all has menace. Yeah. Like, it's the perfect, like, mid-game, late-game card. Because if you play it for... First of all, okay, if I told you a couple years ago, hey, black's going to have a 4-mana 4-5 with no drawback, and as a bonus, it has menace, and it can't be blocked. It can't be chump blocked by one creature. And it's a zombie knight. I mean, it's got... reasonable creature types, it's above the curve power and toughness wise with an ability, and oh, by the way, if you draw it late and you have 10 total mana, because I think it's 2 and 2 black to cast, but you can kick it for 5 and a black, then not only do you get the 4-5 with menace, but you get 8 2-2 zombie knight tokens with menace, and they're not tapped. It's not like Army of the Damned, they're not tapped, they come in ready to go. So like,
yeah, and that's something that always made me mad about cards for years, but I'm glad that these are untapped.
Well, it's like the one card that so didn't bother me was Diagraph Ghoul, the 1-mana 2/2. Sure, yeah. It wants to come in tapped, fine. But then you had all, like I said, you had all these other cards that like were just reasonable cards that, oh, by the way, it comes in tapped. I'm like, why? It's like, why does this come in tapped? Anyway, but yeah, this card is like Wrath or Bust, because there's not many board states that can even remotely play with this card if you kick it. But there's going to be some really fun games decided by this, I imagine.
Yeah, and this just seems like a really fun card overall. It may be a little slow for the highest power level cubes, but I mean, who cares, right? Like, I think these kinds of effects are just awesome to see. And you know, when someone casts it, you're going to know.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to hear about it.
You can be like, can I have some zombie tokens? Oh, I need 8. Yeah, sure. Give me 8. I mean, and like you said, like, you know, it might be slow in for some cubes, but a 4-mana 4/5, like maybe the black deck has ramp. He puts this out on turn 3. That's a lot of power. Like, that's a clock. And like I said, with Menace, that's not nothing.
Yeah,
so
that's hard to kill.
Pretty excited about this one. And oh, by the way, it doesn't die to another card in the set that's pretty good removal. It's uncommon.
Cast Down. Yes, yep. Yes. Okay, sorry. Cast Down is a new Doomblade effect of one black and one colorless for an instant. Destroy target non-legendary creature. So you went from having Doomblade, which is non-black, to Go for the Throat, which is non-artifact, to Cast Down, which is non-legendary. Ultimate price, I think, is monocolor as well. So we now have basically 4 variants to choose from. And with Cube, how many cards are actually legendary? I would say there's a good portion, but it's not a lot. Obviously, it's not this limited environment.
Yeah, it's not like this or, you know, playing EDH where everybody's general is a legendary creature. But it's going to kill. Like, it kills pretty much, to give it a modern perspective, it kills... what, everything in Jund? Which is saying something, because they've got a pretty varied creature assortment. You know, it there's not many cards that can kill a Bloodbraid Elf, a Delver, a Bob, a Tarmogoyf, a Resto. You know, it doesn't kill Thalia, even if you pay 3, but still, it kills Hero of Bladehold.
Yeah.
You know, it kills all those... like Thought Not Seer, all the colorless Eldrazi that got around Ultimate Price. So I think it's definitely a role player. It's something that, you know, you should definitely try. If you play Doomblade, why not play this, right?
Yeah, and more than anything, it's just another tool in the toolbox. Mm-hmm. This, you know, you can choose of the 4 which ones you want to play in the environment that you create, but this card is great. There's also this big mythic that seems kind of interesting. Demon Lord Belzenlok. It's a 6-mana 6/6 flying trampler. Enters the battlefield. Exile cards from the top of your library until you exile a non-land card. Then put that card in your hand. The card's converted mana cost is 4 or greater. Repeat this process. Demon Lord Belzenlok deals 1 damage to you for each card put into your hand this way.
You had me signed up at 6-mana 6/6 flying trample.
Yep.
I mean, that's a house. And then, like you said, you're guaranteed to draw a non-land card for 1 life. And if you draw a big card, you get another one. And it can go again. And you've already got... I mean, unless you reanimate this some way, because it is an enter the battlefield. It's not a cast. But unless you reanimate this some way, you've got 6 mana. So if I draw a 5-drop, that's fine. Give me another 5-drop, I'm fine. So it can definitely refill your hand and just... You know, if they deal with it, well, you've got other cards. So it's pretty good card. I'm, you know,
yeah.
Blacks, of course, you got Grave Titan at the 6-drop slot. There's some other good ones, but I think this one definitely deserves a shot in black right now.
Yeah, and I don't think this card is necessarily better than Grave Titan, but I mean, we've,
oh, no.
How long have we been asking for another, you know, big 6-mana 6/6, or you know, a black 6-drop, I guess, like the, we have Massacre Worm.
You got Massacre Worm. You got the, is Tetsumaka? It's 6-mana, right? But I think this card's better than that, and that card is amazing.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
I'm just excited. This card seems pretty good. I don't know if it, you know, if it'll stay around forever, but once again, this card is... I'm very excited.
So. Also, the only Elder Demon that I know of.
Yeah, that is true.
So it's an interesting creature type, but, yeah, and it's one of those things, like, if you can control the top of your deck, you can just figure out what you're going to get off of it for one life. You know, if it cost, you know, 2 or even 3 life, I think it'd still be okay. Like, 3 life would hurt if you drew more than 2 cards, but You know, that's normally black makes you pay more for something like this, and it's stapled onto a more than reasonable creature.
Yeah, absolutely. There's one other black card. It's actually a common that has been pretty popular in cube discussion, and that is Divest, or Divest, I guess. One black for sorcery. Target player reveals their hand. You choose an artifact or creature card from it, and that player discards that card. So we have Despise. So Thoughtseize isn't going anywhere.
No.
We have Duress, Inquisition, and Despise. And now Divest.
Okay, so if you're going to sideboarding, would you rather be playing this or Duress? Like, usually, which kind of cards are you worried about taking out of their hand? Artifacts and creatures, or just, is it non-creature spell in Duress? I should know that. I want to say
Duress is a non-creature, yes.
A non-creature. So Duress gets Planeswalkers, it gets the Wraths, it gets stuff like that. I definitely think this is playable. I like you said, Thoughtseize better. For the most part, I like Inquisition better. It's real close to Duress. Like, I guess it just depends on the deck, what you're playing against, but I can definitely see playing this card. Because it's going to hit, it's not going to whiff very often at all. You know, especially if you see they've got some kind of ramp, and a lot of good cube decks will. So.
Yeah, well, and no, absolutely. And I think the thing is that this is either going to take their, you know, turn one or turn two ramp away, or it's going to take the creature that you're going to be most worried about. When I think about what I'm most worried about is probably spells in cube, only because the majority of spells in cube have been there for a really long time, and they're just pretty broken cards. Whereas I think the creatures overall, most of the creatures in cube are just pretty good. Whereas I think the spells are just ridiculous. But, you know, regardless, this card seems great.
Yeah, and probably unless you're taking something like a Memory Jar or a Soul Ring or a Thrun, you know, I can definitely see rather having Duress. But I think this does have a place. But it probably needs to be a little bit of a bigger cube, but it's definitely, you know, it's good disruption.
Absolutely. Let me see here. Anything else in black? There's a couple, you know, interesting sagas here.
Rite of Belzenlok. I've got to play it a couple times. It's pretty strong. You're making chump blockers or fodder for the demon that comes out. It winds up making a 6/6 flying trample demon on the third chapter. And the first two chapters, it makes 2/01 clerics each time. So when it's over, you've got 4 clerics, you know, if none of them died. So, and it's a rare, it's only 4 mana. If you've got any other creatures, the drawback is you have to sack a creature every upkeep, or the saga, or the creature, the demon that you make, deals 6 damage to you. So it's kind of that Lord of the Pit flavor. The only thing is, Lord of the Pit, if you couldn't sack another creature, it would tap itself when it did the damage, so you couldn't attack with it. This demon doesn't care. Like, it may do 6 damage to you, but it's going to attack because it's, you know, doesn't tap and it's got flying and trample. So I think it's pretty strong. The way it works out, you could play this on 4 and you get that demon on 6. And like I said, it doesn't cost any mana at that point. Now, granted, they can, you know, unsummon the token, whatever. You know, I still think it's fine. It's probably going to make it in quite a few cubes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this card seems awesome. You know, and like you said, the trade-off of not having, once again, any of this tapped garbage or enters the battlefield tapped or has to be fed or it gets tapped or something, I think is the difference between this being playable and not. There was one other small card here. Fungal Infection is more of like a common, you know, maybe more so pauper side, but, you know, target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn. And then you create a 1/1 green sapperling creature. Basically like a 2 power toughness swing.
Mm-hmm.
A little interesting kind of thing.
Yeah, I've got to play with this. It's kind of like, I don't know if you played much Ixalan, but, you know, Skullduggery. It feels like that with the added upside in like the black sacrifice decks, you know, because you're getting a creature out of it that, yes, it can block and trade with a 2/2 by making it smaller and then blocking with the 1/1, or maybe you've got you know, something that cares when creatures die. Maybe you got something like a Blood Artist effect, or you know, you've got a Birthing Pod in play. You can kill their little dork, you get this thing, then you can use it as a sack, you know, sack it to do something else cool. It's pretty flexible. It's not going to, you know, reinvent the wheel or anything, but it's a solid card.
Hmm. Okay, so let's, I think red is next.
Yeah, red. There's less in red. There's some pretty sweet reprints. A couple of the cards are definitely more tilted toward like standard than more of like an eternal cube type play, but is there one in particular that you're looking at?
Well, the Planeswalker.
Jaya, I originally wasn't very impressed with her. She's, people are going to hate me for saying that in the red mages, but it's 2 and then 3 red, so 5 total mana for a 5 loyalty Planeswalker, which is a good rate, loyalty, as it goes. You see, she's got 2 plus 1s, which is pretty good. It gives you more options, but the first one is add 3 red mana. You can only spend this mana to cast incense and sorceries, so it's kind of like a pyretic ritual, I guess, for free. You get 3 red mana. The other plus one is discard up to 3 cards, then draw that many cards, which is a better version of the original Duretti plus, you know, because there you discarded up to 2 cards and drew that many. So this is just better than that on that one. Her minus 8 is, you know, probably not going to happen all that often. I mean, she does start at 5, so I don't know. But her minus 8 is you get an emblem with you may cast instant and sorcery cards from your graveyard. If a card cast this way would be put into a graveyard, exile instead. So basically it gives all your instant and sorceries flashback for the rest of the game. Which, you know, in a red-blue spells deck, pretty much draws you like 5 or 7 cards. Yeah. By the time this goes off. So it's not as strong as like Torch of Defiance, and it definitely goes in a certain spell heavy deck, but it, you know, it's interesting. I'm glad they're trying different stuff out with red.
Yeah, I it's different.
I wish it was better, but I see what they're going for. Yeah.
It's a pass for me, but I'm always excited just to see the Planeswalkers and all that, and it, you know, it certainly is interesting, but not much more than that.
No. Of the 3 Planeswalkers in this set, this is the least suited for cube, or at least most cubes.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's... Go ahead.
There's a giant dragon in this set.
There is. Well, wait, do you mean the... Oh, yeah, there's the...
Sorry.
Are you talking about Varric's Bladewing or a different one?
Yeah. So, sorry. So, Varric's Bladewing, 4 mana, 4/4 with flying, has kicker for 3 mana. When it enters the battlefield, if it was kicked, create another 4/4 red dragon token with flying called Karrick's Bladewing. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, I see what they're going for. They made both the creature and the token legendary to kind of rein in its power in standard, because, you know, playing it in multiples, get a bunch of them out, you got all these flying dragons. In cube, that doesn't really matter, because we play Singleton, so yay. 4 mana, 4/4 flyer, good. 7 mana for 8 power and 8 toughness worth of 2 flyers, good.
And I think the 2 flyers is actually pretty big. I'd rather have 2 flyers than 1/8/8 in cube.
Oh, yeah.
Just because of the quality of removal.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think this card's reasonable. It's not, you know, I don't know if it necessarily is better than any of the 5 mana dragons, but it's certainly something you can look at and, you know, see if that's right for your environment.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, I've had plenty of the dragons and even stuff like Inferno Titan in my red decks before. You know, sometimes 5 and 6 mana just feels like too much because I'm trying to play 15 lands. I'm just wanting to keep my curve down. And I'm not saying this is better than, say, Hellrider or even Koth or something like that. But as dragons go, give me 4 mana for a decent body that flies. And you know what? Sometimes red deck goes late game. Doesn't want to. Sometimes it does. And whoa, look at that. I flooded out. I've got 7 mana. Now I've got 2 4-4 flyers. And then the other, it slots neatly where it can be in the aggressive red deck, but it can also go in the big red deck. You know, because it kind of scales with the game.
Absolutely.
This is one of the more satisfying, you know, mythic dragons they've had probably since Stormbreath. Unless there's one I'm forgetting, but, I mean...
No, you're right, yeah. No, absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree. And it's interesting because when I play red, I actually don't ever really want to have more than 4 lands. Like, 5 is okay, but I don't want to draw the 5th land until, like, turn 6, when, like I'm on the last possible turn to kill someone.
Yeah.
It's just the 4 mana, like you said, I think is huge.
Yeah, because, like I said, it never fails. You know, I'll get Thundermaw Hellkite, and I was like, yeah, we'll put this in my red deck. It's just 5 mana. What can happen? What can happen is you have it in your opening hand, and you never draw more than 3 lands. So you essentially mold a 6. Now, granted, if you never draw more than 3, you couldn't cast this either, but it doesn't feel as bad. And like I said, sometimes this makes 8 power worth of flyers. So kicker is a very flexible keyword. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and I always like having options. That's why I love the charms, the commands, and kicker. So give me more options. I can make more lines of play. I feel smarter when it goes well, and I, you know, blame myself when it doesn't go well. But I don't blame the cards near as much.
Mm-hmm. One other quick card that I just find fun is Two-Headed Giant. Have you seen this card?
Mm-hmm.
4 mana, 4/4. When it attacks, you flip 2 coins. If both come up heads, it gets double strike. If both come up tails, it gains menace. But if both aren't the same, you're kind of SOL.
And the thing is, you have to attack first before you know what's going to happen. And my opponent, Omoto, like for 4 straight turns, they flipped a heads and a tails. And like if they'd have done any, because one turn I was able to chump block. Another turn it did 4 damage. The next turn I chump blocked. And then the fourth turn I actually had an instant removal spell. But, like, if they'd have got lucky, like, any of those times, it wrecked me. But it was just like, okay, let's try this. But it is a fun card. I wouldn't call it a good card, but it's definitely interesting and fun.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Now that I think about it, we rarely ever get coin flipping effects. That just, like, doesn't happen. I can't remember too many cards like that in recent memory.
Ral Zarek was probably the last cube card I remember. Oh well, of course, you know, sorry. you got mana crypt, but you know, that's been a while. But yeah, like there's not many cube cards that say, hey, flip a coin. So but this one you flip 2 coins.
Look at that. All right, anything else in red?
You could there's a card that my friend absolutely owned me with in limited. It's Fight with Fire, which is an uncommon. And it's not as strong as it probably should be for some cubes, but it's interesting. It's 2 and a red, deal 5 damage to a creature, target creature. You can kick it for 6 more, which is 9 mana, which I know is like usually out of the realm of like what you're going to cast in cube. But if you do ever get to 9 mana, you get to spread 10 damage around however you want. You can go to players, planeswalkers, creatures, whatever. In a lower powered cube, I'd definitely say give this one a shot because it's flexible enough and it kills most creatures you want to kill. And every once in a while, you just get the, oh, you're at 10? Oh, dead. Great. So, and it's got Jaya on it. And, you know, it's not the worst. It's actually the better of the 2 Jaya cards, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. all right, let's go to green here. Green actually has a couple fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you like to start?
Well, could go for the somewhat splashy mythic, but I don't really think it's going to get there. I like the 4 mana 5/5 Territorial Allosaurus, which is just a vanilla 4 mana 5/5, which is still beefy, but it has kicker of 2 and a green. And it says when it enters the battlefield, if it was kicked, it fights another target creature. I almost like that side better. Like, 7 mana, 5-5, yeah. five, kill your, like, kill your 4 power, less than 5 toughness thing. That seems good. Also, you know, green plays the most mana dorks, has the most ramp spells. There's going to be a good number of games you get this out on turn 3. If you have Soul Ring, cast it on turn 2. But, of course, I mean, if a card's not good with Soul Ring, why is it in your cube? But still, this card, it's kind of what green's looking for, I think. I like the fight ability really swings board states.
No, and I think this card is a lot better than people are giving it credit for. There's a bad... So when I build a ramp deck, there's the one mana cost I try to avoid is actually 4 mana.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't ever want to ramp into like a Thrun or like a Obstinate Baloth. Like, it's not the biggest payoff. You really want to get to 5 and, you know, obviously 6 mana to be able to cast the heavy hitting spells. Mm-hmm. But having this card as, you know, the 4 mana card that can also be 7 mana to deal with what you need, because you're going to hit 7 mana pretty often, I think, in ramp decks and cube. And like you said, just having that flexibility is awesome. And, you know, if you do get 7, like you said, I fully agree that the 7 side, I'm actually more excited to cast it with Kicker than without. But even without, it's still a 4 mana 5-5.
Was it somebody said, but what happens if I get to 7 mana and there's nothing I want to kill? I mean, I'm like, well, you're a green deck.
You probably already won, right?
Yeah, you got to 7 mana and you don't want to kill anything. You don't really have any problems. So a 5-5 is probably going to get it done. But yeah, like that. That's like, what was the, what was that card that had suspend? It was in the original Modern Masters. It was the physics. Black. Yeah, physics. Like I said, well, I just won't play any creature until it goes off suspend. Deal. Like, you're not making this worse for me. Like, oh, my suspend kill spell went off on like turn 7. You don't have any creatures in play. I'm not sad about this. So it's the same thing. Like, either this thing kills something, or it just beats them down for 5, or both. So I think this card's good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a proper dinosaur. You know, the last time we were in Dominaria, they were like lizards or beasts or whatever. It's actually a dinosaur. So that's might, if some people are building tribal cubes, this one will slot right in there.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple other... So I guess we should just... I want to talk about this mythic here just because it does relate into a lot of cards we kind of talked about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
But Multani Yavimaya's Avatar, 6 mana, 0/0 with reach and trample, and that card gains +1/+1 for each land you control and each land in your graveyard. You can pay 1 colorless and a green to return 2 lands you control to their owner's hand. Return Multani from your graveyard to your hand. So this is the continuation and the extension of the, I just had the name in my head as I was talking, I forgot it, the 5-3, Titania, what is that card? Oh yeah, okay, so Titania.
Yeah, that whole Commander? Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, Titania.
And the frog.
Gitrog monster, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, just that entire land package, if you're interested in doing anything with graveyard, anything with lands, this is another tool in that toolbox.
Yeah, it makes fetch lands all the better. It is a fairly horrible early game natural order target, but as drawbacks go, it's not that bad. It does have, people forget this thing has reach. I've seen a bunch of flyers attack into this thing. I don't know why it's the first keyword. You'd think you'd see that one first, but it has trample, so chump blocking's not really an option. It's not prime time, but I don't know. I've seen some big ones so far, and having the recursion, like somebody's like, "Oh, I got to return 2 lands." I was like, "Have you ever played Gush? Have you ever been upset casting Gush?" No. Okay,
well,
then.
Well, and not just that, but you can reset specialty lands you may have, right? Like, is it an instant? Can you use that at instant speed?
You can. So you're like, they can target it with Wasteland, and you just flip, go.
Yeah, or you can block with Mutavolt and then respond to bounce the Mutavolt kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this card, I mean, you know, it's, I don't know if it's necessarily the most optimal pick, but it seems fun, so I'm excited for that. Let's take a quick nod here. Llanowar Elves is back.
I really, really don't want to get the promo, but I want to. The promo looks really sweet.
The beta copies of this card, as soon as this card was spoiled, jumped to over $100.
Yeah, that's why I'm rocking the cube currently, and I don't know. Like I said, it should be in every cube, pretty much. I don't really care which version you run, but yeah, you definitely want this in your cube.
And if you're going to get rid of that, you should let me know, because I need one. But
I'll probably hold on to that one, but it's pretty nice. The other card that I thought was really good while I get to play with it. Now, granted, like I said, it was Dominaria Limited, but the uncommon Untamed Kavu that just wrecks, what was it, Kavu Titan that came out a long time ago. Mm-hmm. It's just like strictly better. But it's another one of those bears. It's a 2/2 for 2. Oh, it has Vigilance and Trample, which is really weird. Trample and a 2/2. But it's got Kicker for 3. And if you kick it for a total of 5 mana, it gets 3 +1/+1 counters. So you get a 5 mana, 5/5 Vigilance Trample. It seems pushed, but I mean.
No, that's, I'll say, another flexible effect if you're looking for, you know, I think if you're looking for a green aggro kind of strategy and you're playing your Strongle Root Geist, is that what it's called? Those kinds of cards. This card is excellent as well.
Yeah. And like I said, even if you just have a bunch of mana, making the 5/5 pretty good.
Yeah. Like you said, proliferate is a thing.
Have you seen, what do you think about there's a cycle of cards that's like 3 mana of whatever color it is, and it's usually got some kind of bonus and a slight ability. You know, like in green, it's Stillleaf Champion, which is a green for a 5/4 that can't be blocked by creatures with 2 or less power, which is, like you said, another really aggressive green card. Like I said, I've tried to really make green aggro work before that nobody ever drafted. Like it would have been a good deck, I think, but nobody was really interested in drafting that deck.
Yeah.
Was it Kesig Howler? The 1-mana 2-1.
Kesig Prowler, the one that transforms.
Yeah, transform that. You know, Strangle Root Geist. What was the lion that was in that Jungle Lions? You know, stuff like that. A lot of people aren't excited about playing those decks, but you know, this one's just beefy. You know, it just makes that Leatherback Bailoff just seem silly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This, you know, like, yeah, wow. The triple green, it seems abrasive, but I don't think it actually matters, because if you just play this on turn 2, like, that's pretty big.
Yeah, like I said, I think green, as the reason I mentioned this one and not like the red or the white one, but I think green, it matters the least, because, you know, a lot of your mana dorks tap for green if they don't tap for all colors or, you know, hierarchy or whatever. So, like you said, you can get this out on turn 3, you know, or turn 2 some amount of the time. And I think that's what might make it playable, whereas, like, say, the black one. The black one's pretty bad. Like, it's a shade. it's a shade.
It requires mana investment.
Yeah, mana investment, and it's black, and like, yeah, a lot of black decks are heavy black, but still, it's not the same as green. The blue one is the only other one that I think is kind of playable, because it scales as the game goes on. But like I said, the other ones I don't think are even hardly worth talking about. But the green ones, you might think about it. I don't know. Depends on what you're going for in your cube.
No, absolutely. And there's a couple, you know, there's a couple nice elves in here if you're going to support some kind of tribal synergies. The Thalid as well is another thing people have been really excited about. I don't know if that necessarily translates into cube too much. But there's one other card that I'm really excited about, and that's Broken Bond.
I was hoping that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Sorcery, 1 green, 1 colorless, destroy target artifact or enchantment. You may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. It did not say tapped.
No, it just goes in.
Put a land. And I love me some Reclamation Sage. And this is a pretty familiar and similar effect. So I like this card.
The problem is sometimes you just want to ramp and you don't have a target. Like, that's the bad case of this card. Like, generally, like, if you've got a target, cool. Like, if all you get is to destroy something, you don't have any extra lands in your hand, you still killed a artifact or enchantment for 2 mana. Good deal. But if you ever get to, do all the things, blow up their Jitte and throw an extra land into play, untapped, like you said, it's a pretty good card.
I think that's it for green. Am I missing? There's a couple other things.
Like I said, there's some kicker cards that are interesting, like Grow from the Ashes is a big ramp spell that for 5 you get 2 untapped lands, but it's more EDH stuff. There's Spore Swarm. It's a 4 mana instant make 3/1/1s. You can kind of ambush some people with that, but again, it's not the strongest of the strong. But it depends on what your cube is. You can look around, but I think we went over most of the real good ones.
All right, so into multicolor, and this set is very unique because it has basically multicolor legends at uncommon. And among that, obviously, we have a rare cycle and a mythic cycle. And first and foremost, let's get on to good old our last planeswalker, good old Teferi, Hero of Dominaria. 5 mana, 3 colorless, 1 white, 1 blue for 4 loyalty planeswalker. +1, draw a card at the beginning of your next end step, untap 2 lands. So basically, you draw a card and then you pass the turn essentially, and you get 2 untapped lands, which is pretty good. It lets you hold up your mana leaks and so on and so forth. -3, put target non-land permanent on into its owner's library, third from the top. And then -8, you may get an emblem with whenever you draw a card, exile target permanent and opponent controls. Ooh, what do you think about this?
I'm a huge Venser, the Sojourner fan. Like, it's still in my cube. I still think it's good. It's good in the decks, the white blink decks and stuff. This card may be better. It's a little bit more proactive, letting you draw cards for the plus, and untapping lands. So, like you said, like you get to hold up your mana leaks, your swords to plowshares, whatever. And it kind of has removal. Being able to put something third from the top essentially gets rid of it for, a fair amount of time. And then when they finally do draw it, well, they're missing out on a draw they already had. So it's not like an unsummon where you get card disadvantage. It does something. If you ever get that ultimate off, it's just game over. Like, unless you die that turn, I can't see you losing that game.
Well, especially in blue, like even say you just run a lower power level spell like a divination, that card suddenly becomes double vindicate. Well, not even vindicate, right? Double super vindicate. I don't know. Like
Yeah,
this
anguish
card.
I'm making, just like get out of here. Like I said, it's target permanent, so it's like chaos orb on steroids. Just like blow all the things up. Like I said, that's if you just have, like I said, divination. If you have like treasure cruise or a rev for like 5, it's just game over. They have nothing. But ultimates don't happen a lot. But that's why I really like the plus. If you need to protect him, the minus does that, and it still sticks around at 1 loyalty. Pretty cool. Definitely worth a shot. My Azorius section is so crowded. I don't, and there's another card, if not 2 other cards in this set, I want to try out. So it's going to be interesting what I'm going to move around to get this in there.
Next up, we have Darragaz Reincarnated. If you want to take this one, this guy is the biggest dragon of the set, I guess.
It's 4 in Jund, so 4 black, red, green for a 7/7 flying trample haste, legendary creature dragon. Okay, and he's very persistent. If he would die, instead you exile it with 3 egg counters on it. At the beginning of your upkeep, if Darragaz is exiled with an egg counter on it, remove it, egg counter from it. Then if he has no egg counters, return it to the battlefield. Which is really weird wording, but the reason they had to do it that way is because, say, you path it and it gets exiled. Well, then it's exiled with no egg counters, so it wouldn't just automatically come back because it needs to, during your upkeep, the trigger needs to see a counter, take it off, then put him into play. Which, like I said, it's got haste. So, granted, it's 7 mana. If it dies, it's a couple turns away from coming back. But when it does, it has haste and trample. So, you know, it's up there with the reanimation targets, I'd have to say.
Yeah,
Because obviously,
absolutely.
you don't want to cast this 3 mana or 3 different colors, but still.
Well, and you have Broodmate Dragon and cards like that. And once again, depending on what kind of color identity you want to have and how multicolored you want to go, I think this card's very reasonable. It's very strong. I'm looking at my cube really quick just to see what I run in terms of tricolor. I don't know if I have any currently on my cube tutor list. Yeah.
Well, there's one of the Nicol Bolas versions. I'm sure a lot of people play one of those. As far as planeswalkers go, depends on if you count stuff like Tassigar, which I don't, but he's just in my black section. There's the the Bant Tamio. It's probably playable in some cubes. Sphinx of Steelwind, which you never pay the mana for. I guess the only other true triple color cards would be Leovold and Seed Rhino. So, but yeah, this one looks fun. It passes the Green Sun Zenith and Natural Order test. It's kind of, you know, persistent because it can come back, and it's just a big flying beater with haste. So, yeah, definitely wouldn't knock somebody for putting this in their cube.
No, absolutely not. There's one card I want to talk about, and it's actually related to something entirely different with regards to Magic, and that's Fire Song and Sunspeaker. I'm sure you've heard about this card.
Yeah, the Minotaur legendaries that you can't buy,
Yeah.
you can't open in a pack.
So yeah, you can't open it in a pack, you can only get it as a buy a box promo. And I've changed my opinion on this a couple times because my gut reaction was like, oh, you know, it's just a commander card, you know, whatever, that's fine. And then the reality is, for me, the conclusion I came to is it's kind of a slippery slope, right? You can, you know, say other games are way worse at this. Yu-Gi-Oh is way, way worse at this. I don't play Yu-Gi-Oh, but I do know a couple people that, you know, whatever. And, you know, we've saw something like Scavenging Ooze, the original commander printing, True Name Nemesis, where the only way to get a specific card is to buy it in a sealed product or into supplemental stuff. And I don't think this card is, you know, playable in cube probably at all, but it's an interesting choice they made, I guess. I'm curious if this is to happen again. You know, the community reaction was pretty negative, but at the same time, this may entice people to buy more boxes.
Yeah, I mean, I was checking TCG Player. The cheapest one is 15 plus shipping. So, I mean, it's actually one of the more expensive cards you can get with a box.
And I
Out
mean,
outside of like a couple of Chase Mythics, like I don't think there's what there's not a rare anywhere near this card that you can open. I think
no, definitely not.
there's a couple around like $5 or $6, and then there's only what, 5 mythics that are as expensive as this card right now. And again, it's a full and it's a promo and, you know, those things. I mean, there's definitely fulls you can open that are worth more than this, but I mean, like I said, I don't think it's very cubable, but it's interesting, and the fact you can't get it except for secondary market or buying a box and hoping they have a promo left, it's a
Oh,
weird
I didn't
step.
think about that, actually. They're gonna run out. Wow.
They can. I think, you know, the stores get their allotments. I think the smaller stores get like 10, and then they kind of go up from there. But I mean, if I really wanted it, I guess I'd just TCG player it and just get a better deal on a box some other time. But yeah, it's like just it's in interesting precedent that they've kind of set themselves up for this way.
With regards to any of the other multicolor, do any of them have you excited? I'm trying to see there, you know, there's a couple, not, you know, here and there, but nothing really for cube that comes to mind.
Like I said, I've been playing too much EDH. It's hard for me to analyze some of these cards without seeing it in like the EDH Dirtle glasses. But like Tatyova, Benthic Druid, the Merfolk Druid, that's a 3/3 for 5. It does all the things I want to do. It's a Simic creature, yay. But every time you play a land, or a land enters the battlefield under your control, you gain a life and draw a card. So fetch lands net you a life and draw you two cards. I mean, that's just everything
Oh,
I
wow,
want to
that's
do in a
really good,
Magic
actually.
game, but it costs 5 mana, so it's not, it's not realistically the strongest card ever, but it's really, really cool. I do like what they did with that. Now there's another card that all the ADH people are going crazy about is Slimefoot the Stowaway. It's actually castable in Cube because it's only 3 mana. It's a 3 mana 2/3. And if a Saffron you control dies, it does a drain each opponent, which in Cube is one, and you gain a life. But it has another ability where you pay 4 generic mana or just 4 mana of any color to make a Saffron. So after you play this, if you untap play a land, you've got chump blockers every turn that drain them for one. And of course, there's Saproling synergies or whatever. I don't know. Like I said, like this probably doesn't get there in Cube, but like I bet there's gonna be some good stories coming out of this card. So, like I was dead and I made 5 Saprolings and attacked, and if they blocked, they died, and if they didn't, they died. Situations like that'll come up. But yeah, like I said, the good thing about the uncommon legendary creatures in this set is that some of them are low cost enough, the multicolor, that they could get in there. I know my red green section, my gruel section, is not, besides like Bloodbraid, maybe Huntmaster, it's not, I don't feel like it's super strong compared to some of the other ones. And they've got Halar the Fire Fletcher, that's, if you've got a lot of kicker spells in your cube, it's a really good card. It's a 3/3 trample for 3, and it's got another ability: whenever you cast a kicker spell, you put a +1/+1 counter on it. And what does it say? Then he or it deals damage equal to the number of counters on it to each opponent. Maybe you just put a bunch of counters on it with another spell, and you cast a kick spell, and you do like 5 to your opponent's face. I don't know. I've played it in Limited. It's a elf, which might mean something. Like I said, it's 3 mana. It's in a kind of a weak guild, so yeah, give it a shot. I don't know.
Something new.
Like I said, they've tried a bunch of different little areas to, like the where is it at? Oh, the is it the one blue red 2/2 flying haste? Adelise the Cinderwind. It's a legendary creature, human wizard, and whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, wizards you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. So spells matter wizards. Looks kind of interesting. It's definitely like a build around, but like I said, the cheaper cards in this set could have potential. I don't know.
No, absolutely. I completely agree with you. There's a lot of I was even looking at Shayna Sisse's Legacy,
Me too.
just a
Me too.
small 2 mana creature, and it seems reasonable. It gets +1/+1 for each creature you control. If you're playing this in a deck with Savanna Lions and maybe like a Voice of Resurgence kind of stuff, seems fine.
Yeah, this
Once again, it
card
may not
gets.
make the ceiling of the highest power level cubes, but it's still certainly a fun strategy you can kind of do.
Yeah, it gets kind of ridiculous with Voice of Resurgence tokens, so.
So anyway, quickly, we're gonna wrap up here. We have one land I want to talk about really quickly, and then also an additional artifact we didn't bring up: Damping Sphere, 2 mana artifact. If a land is tapped for 2 or more mana, it produces one colorless instead of any other type and amount. Each spell a player casts costs one more to cast for each other spell that player has cast this turn. So I don't know if this necessarily makes it in terms of cube. I don't think there are too many people out there that run, even maybe Pithing Needle in terms of like Miser hate cards for opponents. But it's certainly something,
Why are you trying to ruin my storm count, man? It's hard enough to do as it is. Why you want to make this card that just wrecks me? I mean, you already have Thalia. You have Lodestone Golem. I mean, I'm trying to get around that already, and I can't kill this thing because it won't get into combat. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's a good card for Constructed. I don't, like I said, it's a neat card, and I like the design space. I don't know if it gets there for Cube, but it can definitely wreck certain decks.
Icy Manipulator reprint, just a fun little. If you're into Icy, and you got your Icy, here we go, cheap ones.
Now, granted, I would never want to open that card as my rare, but yeah. I will tell you, limited environments with this at uncommon, it gets pretty miserable.
Yeah.
Like, I had an opponent that had two of these things out, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm never doing anything I want to for the rest of the game, unless I draw, like, my three burn spells, and that's pretty much what had to happen.
Yeah. The Rare Land Cycle is the reprint from the Innistrad Czech lands, is that what they're called?
Yeah, Czech lands, the enemy buddy lands, I guess, would be the term that some people use. Some of them got really sweet art. It's good they're being reprinted because some of them were getting up there.
Yeah, Sulphur Falls, Cinderland Harbor, Isolated Chapel, Clifftop Retreat, Glen Cemetery. Yeah, these are, most people play some mix of these, and they're certainly reasonable. Cabal Stronghold, though, is the rare land that I want to talk about. It's a land, taps to add a colorless, and you can pay 3 mana and tap it to add 1 black for each basic swamp you control.
It's kind of a worse Cabal Coffers, and by kind I mean it is a worse Cabal Coffers, but it's, you know, if you're in a mostly black deck, it can definitely ramp you out. Now, I'm trying to remember, does Cabal Coffers doesn't tap for just mana by itself, does it?
I don't think so.
I think you have to tap it two and tap it for the black equal to swamps you control, but it doesn't have the tap for colorless just by itself, so that could make this a little bit more playable, but then you don't get by with your Urborg shenanigans where you play Urborg now with everything you've got swamps, because they have to be basic swamps.
Yeah, and then go ahead.
I opened up a pre-release foil, so it's going in EDH somewhere. I doubt it goes in the cube, but it looks shiny. It's nice.
There's a uncommon land cycle. It's pretty interesting. The only one that I really want to talk about is Memorial to Glory. It's a land. It's the white one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's battlefield tap. You can add 1 white, and then you can pay 3 colorless and a white, tap it, sacrifice it to create 2 1/1 knights. Or 1/1 soldiers, pardon me. It's not bad.
No.
The black one also isn't bad. You can pay 2 and a black to tap it and return to a creature card from your graveyard to your hand. Not terrible.
Yeah,
even the blue one.
The blue one's really good. I like it. Drawing the cards. It's essentially 6 mana or 6 lands worth of tapping to draw 2 cards. But I do like drawing cards. I am saddened that the red one is so horrendous. It's like the worst demolish I've ever seen. I think it's 5 mana and tap and sack it to destroy target land.
Yeah, you're never gonna.
No, that's just horrible. Like, I'd rather do that and like shock something.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really weird. Like, 9 times out of 10, if there's a cycle of them, I want to play the whole cycle. Like, very rarely do I not play a whole cycle of something. So the red one being so bad is probably going to keep me from playing any of these. The green one's pretty good.
Do you play Gaia's Cradle?
I do.
Do you play Sarah's Sanctum?
I do not. I do play Talarian Academy, Gaia's Cradle. I don't play Shivan Gorge because, man, that card's bad. And I can't even remember what the black one
Phyrexian is. Phyrexian Tower?
No, Phyrexian Tower's not. No, is that it?
I thought
it was. I don't remember. But, I mean, that was not bad. If it's Phyrexian Tower, that was not bad. But, yeah, Shivan Gorge is so... I can't believe they put that in From the Vault, too. Now, granted, that From the Vault is insane now with some of the cards in it. But, ugh. Like, really? That's the shiny card you're giving me? Out of that cycle, that's the one...
Well,
I mean,
they also put High Market, which I wasn't a fan of either. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah. At least people play that in EDH. Who plays Shivan Gorge? Nobody. The person that's got the From the Vault tribal deck? I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, to wrap up here, last card, Zalfirin Void. When it enters the battlefield, scry one. Just adds 1 colorless. So if you're playing, Ash Barrens, this is a, you know, it basically competes with that slot, or maybe you're playing Evolving Wilds. I don't know if this is necessarily going to make it, but it's just something.
I think it probably could, like, as far as deck building restrictions, I think if you're a two-color deck without a splash and you don't have a bunch of other colorless utility lands, I think it's fine. You know, I always like the scry lands from Theros. Now, this is only colorless, but it isn't coming to play tapped either. So, you know, it's got some definite gameplay value, but I hear what you're saying about only being able to play so many colorless utility lands in your cube. And this effect is kind of minor, but hey, maybe I can pick it up with my Multani and then replay it and do it again.
There you go. But anyway, so that is our episode for Dominaria. Thank you so much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. It has been a year. We have returned. Anything you want to say to the people at home?
Just glad to be back. Hopefully we'll do this more regularly. And if you've got any, I don't know, comments, suggestions, you want to tell us how stupid we are for getting XYZ card, then, you know, send us a tweet or comment on this somewhere, and we'll talk about Cube over it.
And where can the people find you if they want to reach out and do that or follow any of your content?
You can find me at Quad9s. Now, that's all spelled out on Twitter. Or my YouTube page is Quad, the number 9 and a S. I've been demonetized because, well, I don't really do this for a living, so okay. But yeah, that's really the only two main places that you can reach me on social media. But
I've also been demonetized, so it's okay.
You know, I don't put out 5 videos a week, and they're not 10-minute videos, and
yeah,
they're not like Sam's videos where they're amazing and get, you know, 20,000 views because they're amazing. So, yeah, I know my place, and it's putting out a bad pack opening every 3 weeks and talking about Cube sometimes. That's fine.
Shouts out to Sam.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But anyway, so you can find me on Twitter at Zakeel Gordon. You can find me on YouTube now at Zakeel Gordon, no longer Merfolk MTG. My Black Lotus vlog video will be coming soon. And as always, you know, let us know, like, active, you know, tweet us, let us know you listen to it, or whatever it is. This will be available on YouTube, SoundCloud, and MTGCast. We're excited to be back. So we have a couple of nice episodes lined up. I'm excited to be able to talk Cube with everyone, and we'll see you soon. Anyway, have a good one.